This is the Thanks for Sharing podcast, the podcast where we explore all things recovery, healing, and relationship.
Remember to subscribe and download episodes in the iTunes Store, the Google Play Store, or on the Podbean app.
You can find more Thanks for Sharing at www.thanksforsharingpodcast.com or on Facebook at facebook.com/healingpaths. That's path with an S.
Hello and welcome to the Thanks for Sharing podcast. I'm John T.
And I'm Jackie P.
We're excited today. We have, is this our second guest ever? No, third.
Third.
You're our third guest, Rachel. We're being joined today by Rachel Smith. She is the director of Women in Motion. And we're going to have her introduce herself and talk a little bit about the program. Before she does, I wanted to tell a little bit about why I wanted Rachel on the podcast and why we're talking. A couple months ago, I attended the Women in Motion, is it the celebration
dinner? Our end of year banquet.
End of year banquet. And I was really
John is a woman in motion.
Yes. Well, I found out that they've had one man in motion.
Oh, good.
Yes,
okay.
And they're going to retire his number, right?
Yeah, that's what he said. He wants us to retire his number.
Right.
People are wondering why you were at the Women in Motion banquet dinner.
Rachel and her husband are good friends of my wife and I.
Okay.
And I have always from a distance liked what Women in Motion does. I went to this banquet and it had a recovery meeting feel. It was really cool. We got to hear stories and people were talking about overcoming things. I'm really impressed with how you're running the program and what you're introducing these women to, in addition to getting them ready to do a half marathon or a 5K. So I thought it was very recovery-esque and applicable.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Some of the stories were really moving. So I wanted to have Rachel on to talk a little more about what they do. So do you want to introduce yourself?
Yes, I'm Rachel Smith, and I have been the executive director of Women in Motion. This was my fourth season, but I was the first intern for the program back in 2008. So it started in 2005 at McKady Hospital and then moved over to Weber State University. It was run by two professors, Julie and Rod Hansen, that are dietitians. They teach nutrition, and they are passionate about improving quality of life for people, and she wanted to focus on improving their quality of life for women with high risk health. So anyone with a BMI over 30, so that's your height and weight, right?
And this would be a good time to introduce Gibson too. Rachel's adorable little boy Gibson is here,
and he wants to color.
Well.
Yeah. So they started with 25 women, and they or 26 women, and they did the Ogden Marathon as a relay. Each woman did 1 mile, but the next year, the ladies who came back wanted to do more. They wanted, and so they ended up doing the half marathon. Some of them did the marathon, some of them did the 5K, and that's what it stayed. And then a few years ago, Weber State decided they couldn't support the program anymore. So this is after I started directing it, and I couldn't let it go. I couldn't let it disappear for the ladies that have been doing it from the beginning. Some of our women have been with the program from the very first year.
That's
and they're
awesome.
Just addicted. They love
yeah,
it.
That's awesome.
Because of the camaraderie and the support, the encouragement that they get from the staff and from the ladies who are doing it with them. And I have worked with these women and known some of them since 2008, and I just didn't want it to disappear for them. And so I have been on a rough learning curve in starting a business. It's a nonprofit, but we started a nonprofit to keep it going. So I did that at the same time I was having Gibson. So that was really stressful for me, but I'm so glad that I did it. And it's kind of been a blessing in disguise for it to leave Weber State, because we were really limited as to what we could do under their direction, what we could do in their facility. And we've been able to do a lot of really fun things since leaving Weber State. And we're grateful that they supported the program for so long, and we still have a connection with them. But I think being an independent entity, it has been a really awesome adventure, and we're able to grow the program so much more.
I think you were saying at one point, leaving Weber State, like many more women can participate because you're not beholden to grant money.
Yeah. So, and we couldn't call it Women in Motion at Weber State. It had to be Weber in Motion because of the
Because of the egomaniacs. Discrimination,
yeah. Because of discrimination. And, you know, the university didn't want to be liable for that. And we can really focus on providing the program just for women. And we will accept men, too. But that is the population that we want to focus on is women who have high-risk health. So high BMI, high cholesterol, high blood pressure, high hemoglobin A1C, so that's pre-diabetes. And a lot of these women want to lose weight. It's not a weight loss program by any means, but a lot of times when they're focused on the physical activity that we provide and structure for them, they start eating better, and a lot of them do see some weight loss as well.
Yeah.
So
tell us kind of a composite story when a woman comes to Women in Motion, like, what's their journey? What's their process through the program?
So we start registration in November, but the program really starts in January, and it's an 18 to 20. We did 20 weeks this year, a 20-week program. We meet twice a week, and it's a structured training program for them to be ready in May to do the Ogden half marathon or 5K. So depending on where they're starting, it's nice because it's you don't have to do the half marathon.
Mm-hmm.
Just wherever your health and physical activity allows you to move forward from is okay. But we meet Wednesday nights at McKady Hospital this season and last season, hopefully next season, for a class. So we did a curriculum this year. We studied the books Intuitive Eating and The Gifts of Imperfection. For a curriculum, we talk about that for an hour, and then we have a workout session, so strength training. We did yoga, Pilates, water aerobics, a lot of different kinds of exercise. And then Saturday mornings, we meet for our longer training walks. So starts at like 30 minutes in the beginning of the season, and then closer to the half marathon, we're doing like 11 to 12 miles for those people who are doing the half marathon.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really gradual. A gradual progression throughout the season, and we have a daily schedule for them to follow, so those days that we're not together during the week, they know what they're supposed to be doing at home, you know, as far as strength training goes, or if it's a rest day or whatever. So it's nice because it's flexible, you know, they can switch those days around if they need to, but we have it all set out very clean and cut for them to get ready for that half marathon or 5K. And we had more women do the 5K this year than we've ever had. We had 19 people do the 5K, which makes me really excited because that means people are getting the message that it's not just for women who are already walking or ready for that half marathon. It's for anybody. And we had a lot of older ladies, too, join the program this year who really could only do the 5K. That was the most that they could do, and that's great. You know, we're happy that they were with us. So,
yeah. So I was really interested at the banquet, bringing in the Gifts of Imperfection. That's a resource we use a lot.
Right.
That was written by Brené Brown. And so in the work we do with addiction recovery, we talk a lot about shame.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm curious if you could tell us a little more about why you picked Gifts of Imperfection and what you saw that bring to the program.
So I saw one of Brené's TED Talks a little while ago and was just hooked.
Which, if you don't know who she is, we'll put links to that on the website so that you can get hooked too.
Yeah. And she just really spoke to me. And so I looked up the books that she had written and I bought them all. But I started with The Gifts of Imperfection. And while I was reading it, so I read this 2 years ago, while I was reading it, I just kept wanting to tell everybody about it, you know, because it spoke so much comfort to me in the fact that I am an imperfect human being and an imperfect woman, imperfect parent, you know, but we all are. And I think we hold ourselves to such impossible standards. And I was trying to think of what we could do with Women in Motion that would be different. And we hadn't done curriculum in a long time. We would just have different guest speakers come in every week.
Mm-hmm.
And so I thought this is a really good opportunity to share this message with ladies who I think need to hear it and be empowered by the fact that they are not perfect and that's okay. And so I chose a different guidepost from the book to focus on each week. And some weeks we didn't get to address it in a class setting, but, you know, we had some field trips, I guess you could call them. and I would make like a handout, you know, but I would ask them, they had the reading schedule. They needed to follow the schedule so that they could know what topic we were going to be discussing. And I think it went really well. Some of the ladies didn't want to read a book. They didn't want to have homework, you know, but there were three women who approached me probably like 6 weeks into the program and asked if I could refer them to a therapist because they said this book is like cracking something open inside of me, you know, and it's a good thing, but I need to talk to somebody, you know? And I was so encouraged by that because I thought we're never too old to learn something new, but also never too old to learn something new about ourselves. You know?
When you started kind of that curriculum and introducing that book, did you know the potential that had to kind of crack that open and that people would be looking for therapy resources?
No, I was surprised when that's what, you know, the feedback I was getting, but I'm so glad that it was, you know, the result. And I know not 100% of the women loved the curriculum, but enough of them did, and I got enough good feedback that I'm so glad that's what we did, you know? And I have to keep telling myself, too, even those ladies that were like, oh, I'm just not a reader, or I don't want to keep up, I'm like, they've got it now. Like, somewhere in their house, they've got that book. So maybe, like, down the road, they'll pick it up and get something out of it, because I have read it many times, and in preparing, you know, for the lessons, and it's probably one of my favorite books. It's kind of like scripture to me now, you know? And one of the ladies in our, one of the participants this year, she's done the program a couple years before, kind of sporadically in the past, and she's the one that told me about Brené and told me to look up her TED Talk. And so she actually taught one of the classes. She taught one of the guideposts this season, and it was cool to have help, you know, from someone else who is so passionate and who introduced me to Brené Brown and her work. So it was kind of fun to have it be like a team effort as far as getting the message to people. But I just think it goes so well with learning to have more confidence in yourself. The things that Brené talks about in that book, helping these women to feel more empowered and confident, because that is the main thing that I have felt since I interned with the program, is that this is a program that helps women to gain confidence. But I think if we can introduce the different topics, like learning to let go of being perfect, or learning to have fun and laugh at yourself, and not take yourself quite so seriously. And it went really well hand in hand with our intuitive eating book as well, because that's all about listening to your biological cues, you know, not following a rigid eating plan like six times a day at certain times. You know, you're listening to what your body wants and needs, and having compassion for yourself if you have a misstep. And just learning from it and moving forward. And I see wellness as like a, so much more than just food and exercise, you know. It's mental, it's emotional, it's spiritual, and these two books really worked hand in hand to address more of that this season.
So I remember once I was having a conversation with my brother who had gained some weight during law school for him, and you know, I mean, this is maybe one of the frustrations a lot of women have, is that it seems that for men weight goes off much quicker, you know. And so he had gained weight during law school, and then after law school, he lost the weight. And so I was asking him, like, oh, how did you lose the weight? Like, that's great. And he was like, it's simple math. Calories in, calories out. Like, you know. And I was just like,
I'm surprised everybody doesn't do this.
Right. And he's a very, you know, he's a thinker like that, like very concrete, like, you know, you just have to, it's simple addition, simple subtraction. Like, you don't even really have to get into times and divide, right? It's it's addition and subtraction. And I was like, again, like, oh, there's that math issue again, like, because I've never been good at math. I can add and subtract quite easily, though.
Worked really hard to get there, but we're there.
Right? And I was just like, I think it's more than that, you know? And he was like, it really isn't.
For a lot of people, it's not. But for people who have thyroid problems, mm-hmm. it is. Mm-hmm. And for people whose stress is through the roof,
yeah.
it is mm-hmm. because your cortisol comes yep. into play. And so it's interesting. And especially for women who feel like, yeah, I run around all day, you uh-huh. know, but then you really look at it, it's like you drive around all day. You're not yeah. moving around all yeah. day, you know, and we're stressed. We're held to these impossible standards of like having a six pack. And that is just not realistic, right. you know, right. especially for a 65-year-old woman, you know,
yes.
how many 65-year-old women do you know that have a six pack and a thigh gap
uh-huh.
and no fat on their arms when they move them? Like,
that
well,
is
not...
And some of that may be, right, that hopefully by 65, we've learned that there's more to us and life
yes.
than
yeah.
that.
And
right,
that that's
the
not
gap.
The ultimate goal. Really, it's like improving your quality of life and mm-hmm. uh-huh. your level of happiness and being able to accept yourself where you are in yeah. different stages of life. You know, in law school, your brother didn't have time to work out an hour
right.
a day.
Well, and he was stressed
mm-hmm.
more than normal.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right? So I'm guessing probably some emotional eating.
Yeah.
That he may not do other times.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and that's where the intuitive eating book comes into play. It's really like just being more aware of when you're eating and why you're eating, when you're stopping. Like
mm-hmm.
if you're stopping when you're overstuffed, you know, if you're right. eating as like a punishment for yourself because you want to feel some kind of pain,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
you're eating to the point where you're just uncomfortable, or you're satisfied and I can stop now. And you know that food is always available to you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's there are a lot of different reasons why we eat, why we move our body, or why we don't.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
we try to address a lot of that with those two books. And I think having it structured, like I paired a guidepost from The Gifts of Imperfection with a principle from Intuitive Eating.
Mm-hmm.
And I could have paired them in a million different ways and they all would have gone together.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that they just really played well together and got the message across that we are more than just this physical body that needs to look perfect.
Mm-hmm.
We need to move to feel good. And a lot of, you know, the first week of the program, we go around, everybody introduces themselves and says how they heard about the program and why they're doing it. And probably half of the ladies there always say, this is the first thing I've done for myself in a long time. You know,
mm-hmm.
finally my kids are adults or in high school and I don't have to be running them around all the time or whatever. And it's the first thing that they've done to focus on themselves for a long time. And really it's just spending time away from your family that you have to figure out.
Mm-hmm.
And that's hard. And we've had some young moms join the program. We've had some high school girls in the program,
mm-hmm.
which is
mm-hmm.
awesome. And I hope that we can do more of that in the future so that they can see, you know, I need to start now so that I don't lose my sense of self. So in such a way that I come back at 65 and I need to find myself all over again,
yeah.
you know?
Yeah.
But it's neat that these ladies are finally doing that, that they're finally taking the time for themselves and focusing on their health, because it's like they say with the oxygen mask, you know, you have to put your own
mm-hmm.
oxygen mask
right.
on before you can help others with theirs. And it's like you kind of get to the point where you're so strung out and you're so stressed, and if you would take a couple of hours a week for yourself,
mm-hmm.
you would be, you know, less snappy at your
mm-hmm.
family or
mm-hmm.
whatever. And so it's nice to hear those results too, that people are able to care for their families
mm-hmm.
or their loved ones better. A lot of these ladies are caring for their parents now, so same thing. But also you know, they're just happier a little bit. And one example in particular, one lady has three small girls, and just the things that they do together are totally different. Like, her daughters did the kids' K with her this year, and that's where the kids at like 12:30 get to do the last K, you know,
yeah.
of the marathon and go across the finish line. And they go hiking all the time, and they're outdoors a lot. And they didn't do a lot of that before she started the program. So it does change the lives of the people around them, too.
Uh-huh.
And that reminds me, I just finished listening to a book called Spark. I forget who it's by. I'll put the reference in the notes of the show. But the thing that hit me, this author was talking in the beginning about the school district in Illinois that is changing the role that PE has in the curriculum, where, you know, we have No Child Left Behind, and a lot of schools had been cutting PE. This school actually doubled down and increased PE, and they would have 0-hour PE that would happen before school started. And the focus was on getting your heart rate to a training zone rather than mastering the sport or getting the mile in a certain time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I was listening to that, and I was thinking, like, my experience around physical exercise for so much of my life, I think, robbed me of the opportunity to enjoy it and to do what felt good to me and what made sense to me.
Mm-hmm.
So I love hearing that, and I felt this at the dinner, that there was a real, like, what better way to get to know yourself than getting into your body and how it works? Even if you have a thyroid issue or you have other health problems, like, that is part of you and that's part of the story. And you have to start where you're at. And maybe there's not some goal to get to. Maybe it's just, this is where I'm at today and this is what I need today. And I think being able to do that in body and mind is transformative.
It really is.
I love that approach because, I mean, I remember, you know, some of what I remember in PE going back to, like, elementary school was that rope that you had to climb and get to.
So hard.
And, like, my arms were like, I don't know how to do this.
Yeah.
Like,
or the pull-up bar.
And it was just like, do it. And I was like, my arms were kind of like, we've never done this before.
How do you go?
Like, this isn't how our arms work yet.
Right.
And so there was that feeling of failure. But a lot of the emphasis kind of on exercise or physical movement at that point, you know, when I'm young, I'm not focused on exercise per se.
Right.
But there was a lot of externally driven things, like who's going to be the best at this, right? Or who can do this the fastest or the longest, or things like that, you know, or like when I started, you know, at a young age playing soccer, like who's going to win? Instead of like what you're talking about in this book, that was more about what is my heart rate doing and what does my body need versus who can do it the best. It's much more like, let's go internal and see what my body needs, and then the results are going to be good from that.
Yeah.
Even though they may look different for various people, it's about what I need. And so I love that approach about connecting internally with my body and saying, my body's good enough, let me see what my body says I need, and then just trusting that the results will follow.
Yeah.
And I think there's a real reciprocal relationship between tuning into the body and what it needs, and maybe even pushing just a little bit. And the mind, one of the things that book was talking about is exercise is indicated for reducing depressive and anxious symptoms. And I think one of the reasons why is because as you exercise, you can say, I did this and it impacted my health and my mood. So it gives you this feeling of empowerment.
Of having a choice on some level.
And they talk about on a molecular level, like it stresses the cells just enough to give them this growth edge. And I'm curious, with the women that you've worked with, Rachel, like, have you seen any of that? Like, they're learning that they can do something they didn't think they could do before.
Yeah.
Or they're learning to push just a little bit and get to a place they've never been before.
Yeah, that's I think the greatest thing is that most of the women come in on that first week and they're all like, I'm going to do the 5K. There's no way I could do a half marathon, you know? But I'm so glad we have, like, alumni who are there to tell them, you can. Like, you know, they don't have to choose their event until at least a month into the program. So it's nice for them to get a few weeks in to see, like, oh yeah, I've already done a 5K. You know, like 3 miles, we just did that and I could do this, you know, a few more times. But it's also nice that the camaraderie in the group is amazing. Like, it will blow you away. Even when people come by themselves, you know, they kind of want to walk by themselves. They're really inspired by everybody around them. And like you were talking about, you know, well, I'm not as fast as this person. I'm not as strong as this person. And I love that there's not, like, the only number we really focus on is the number of miles. And it doesn't matter how long it takes you. You know, you don't have to be the fastest. You don't have to be the strongest. You don't have to be the skinniest. It's okay if you're the biggest.
You have to be the first.
Yeah. And it was really great this year because there was great weather. We've had some pretty crappy weather the past couple of years at the marathon, but everyone stayed at the finish line and we waited until everybody got across. And it's really emotional and exciting, and but it doesn't matter how long it takes. And with you know, being aware of what is going on in your own body and pushing yourself. It's like, you know, they may not have walked that far, so they may not have had blisters on their feet before, mm-hmm. or shin splints was really big this year. And so, you know, a lot of them have a lot of questions about, like, is this a normal feeling? And they get much more in tune with their body. Like, this is an okay kind of pain, you know, and this is not.
Yes.
And they're more willing to go to a physical therapist and ask these questions. We have those doctors come in and talk to them about, like, you know, this is plantar fasciitis and this is what it hurts like, and it's okay. Mm-hmm. Like, you can keep functioning with that. And arthritis in your knees. Mm-hmm. We've got one lady who, she's done the program for, I think this was her 7th year, and she had to wear a brace on her knee this year. She was diagnosed with arthritis in her knee, and it is really super painful, and her time was a lot slower, but she is going to keep doing it. She's not going to let that diagnosis stop her. You know, some diagnoses you can't avoid, and you can't just power through, but a lot of things you don't have to let control you, you know?
And I think that's so great, because I think one of the things we have to work on with, like, clients that we work with, or, you know, maybe listeners of this podcast may have to start to differentiate between, is what kind of discomfort is okay, and maybe even good, and what discomfort is not.
Right?
And so when we're working with trauma clients, any type of discomfort the body may be feeling, they're like, oh, this is bad. This is really bad. Yeah. We can't do this.
Or they want to dive in with both feet because that's what feels normal.
Right.
You know, like, there's this discomfort on the extremes and this extreme reaction to it.
And so being able to recognize what discomfort pushes me towards growth and so is actually good for me. That discomfort serves a good purpose sometimes.
Yeah.
But what discomfort do I need to recognize and, you know, maybe get help, recognize and shift my limitations around that.
Mm-hmm.
But how do I respond to discomfort? And a lot of our clients and possibly people in your program, you know, may have some trauma in their past. And so when the body starts to get uncomfortable, the brain recognizes that as dangerous versus being able to say, okay, wait a minute, let's pause and let's ask some questions.
Yeah.
And let's do some consultation, and maybe this discomfort is good for me.
Well, and that's a huge, like, as you were talking about, they were asking, what is this pain? Is it normal? Like, when trauma or, you know, keeping up with the pace of life and focusing on others and not taking time for ourselves takes us so far out of our body, we don't even ask those questions. And I think that's huge to start coming back and saying, wait a minute, I'm not familiar with this. What is this even about?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I think as we get some information about how our body's working and why it's working, that really helps us make that evaluation. Is this that growth stuff that I need to listen to and push into? Or is this my body saying, stop, let's take a break?
Yeah.
But that curiosity coming back is huge, I think, in restoring the connection between body and mind.
I have a client that I've worked with for several years who has really chronic headaches. And when she finally started getting medical assistance with this, like, for her, she was just like, this is just my life, like, it's always like this. And so she went into the doctor, and the doctor started asking her questions, and it was really unsettling for her, because she's like, I don't know how to answer his questions, like, I don't, you know, like, so he would scale out, like, is this headache, like, what is a headache on a scale of a 2 look like versus an 8?
Yeah.
And for her, she was like, I don't even know if I have different headaches, you know. And he was like, well, most likely you do. And so she really had to start tuning into her body to be able to answer those questions. And for her, she thought any headache like a 2 was going to end at a 10. And she was like, they don't.
Yeah.
And there's things that I can do sometimes, you know. But at some point when it's hitting like a 6, I need to take this pill.
Yep.
But if it's a 2, and she's like, and maybe I could even get to where I have a 1 or a 0.
Yeah.
But for her, she hadn't even really tuned into that. She was just functioning and disconnecting and numbing what any pain in her body was.
An- you're going to
say something. Sorry, yeah, that just makes me think that a lot of these women come in, you know, they're like, oh, I could do this half marathon and lose like 50 pounds while I'm doing it, right? Mm. And that's been their goal forever, is they want to lose all this weight because then they're going to be happy at this lower weight. You know, it's that number on that magic number on the scale or the number on your pants that like, when I can fit into these pants, I'm going to be so happy. But it's really fun to watch them realize, like, oh, I can be happy in this body that I have now, you know, and like maybe I do want to lose some weight, but I can, this body can still serve me, you know, and I don't have to be miserable and I don't have to be uncomfortable. Like, I can start wearing clothes that flatter me and that feel I feel good in. I can eat food that tastes good to me and I don't have to feel bad about it. I don't have to feel bad that I'm not. That's not my number one priority, is to lose 50 pounds, you know?
That makes me think, I was working with a client and she was not at the size or weight that she wanted, you know, so she wasn't hitting that number. And I mentioned to her, like, I noticed that all of your clothes are black. And, like, you seem kind of like a colorful person. Like, I think you're really funny and I think you've got this great personality. And, I mean, I love to dress in black, too. Like, I think black is a classic, right? Like... And so it doesn't always mean you're, like, you know, depressed or going to a funeral. But I said, I've never seen you in something other than black. Like, I don't even see gray. Like, you know, what is this about? And she just kind of talked about, like, how colors, dressing in colors, like, would draw attention. Like, people might notice me, and I don't want to be noticed because I hate the body I'm wearing, I'm in, you know. And so I wear black so that nobody notices me.
Yeah.
It was uncomfortable that I had noticed that she always wore
black.
And that reminds me of a story from the banquet. I'm wondering if it's okay to tell. So the woman who was a personal trainer. I cried through her story.
We all did.
Could you tell it?
Yeah. So one of our participants this year, she had been heavy. You know, not a super skinny person her whole life, and ended up getting to the point where she lost like 150 pounds. And she was recognized on the news for it, in the newspaper, and she became a trainer. She found that this is something she was really passionate about and wanted to help other people with. And then she divorced from her husband and moved home and remarried, and they got pregnant, and they were both really excited about it. She had an older child. I want to say he was like 10, and then lost her baby. Her baby lived like 6 days, I think, and she was feeling a tremendous amount of grief, and the weight just came back on, and she was a trainer, you know, and she's
still
like
going
a
personal, to work.
Yeah, yeah, still going to work. Yep, and yeah, physical trainer. And, you know, some of her friends who she'd been training for events with, you know, that she was running half marathons with, kind of shied away because they didn't know how to talk to her, how to respond to her, and what to say. They felt uncomfortable with the amount of grief that she was feeling. They didn't know if they should ask her about it, if they should ignore it, or what they should do. And so, you know, she felt like her skinny, fit friends were ignoring her now, and... she was kind of becoming this isolated person, and not just because of them, but because, you know, she didn't know what to say either. And, so then she also was embarrassed because she was a heavy personal trainer, and who, what clients, you know, she, in her mind, what clients are going to want to come to me, where I can't even, you know, keep the physique that they want to have themselves. And so she was having a really hard time, and she found some other work, and, but for, probably it's coming up on 3 years, has been in this grief bubble, she calls it. And a friend, an older friend that I actually knew from school, referred her to the program, and she called her one day and she's like, I don't want it to hurt your feelings, but I think that this program would be really good for you. You know, I think it's right up your alley. It's, you know, working with ladies that want to find themselves again, and I think that it would be good for you. And she wasn't offended. She thanked her friend and came to our second meeting. She missed our first meeting, but she came to our second meeting, and we were sitting in these like groups of like 6 to 8 people, getting to know you type of activity. And she sat down, And she had emailed me to let me know she was coming, see if it was okay if she hadn't been to the first meeting. And I went and sat in her group, and she told like 30 to 60 seconds about herself. And she basically said, I lost a baby, I'm having a really hard time, and I want to find myself again. And I don't want to stop living because of her baby. And she signed up for the 5K because she'd been having so much grief that she was, you know, breaking out in hives and just having a really, really hard time physically and emotionally and mentally. And she was able to do all of the long walks with us. You know, she came on that 11-mile walk and she said, if I can do this, I know I can do a half marathon. And I haven't felt this good in a really long time. And so I'm going to do the half. And I bumped her up to the half marathon, her registration, and I walked it with her. And we ran some, and we just talked the whole time. But when we crossed the finish line, we were both crying, and she just told me, she's like, this is the first time that I felt like I wasn't pretending to feel something, you know? And I did every mile for her and me and her baby and me, and I feel like... You know, the motto for Goal, the Goal Foundation that puts the marathon on, it's G-O-A-L, get out and live. And she wrote me this long email about how, you know, that was really inspiring to her too, because she'd been getting out for the last 2.5 years, but she hadn't really been living. She'd been pretending to feel things, pretending to be happy for other people, you know, in all these situations, and just kind of like putting on a front. But she felt like because of this... challenging herself to do the miles and, you know, not necessarily losing the weight, but doing something hard and accomplishing it and doing it because of her daughter that she lost and not, you know, hiding because of what happened or trying to cover things up to make other people more comfortable. She just felt like it was a huge accomplishment. And she said, we can't get rid of her. She's going to come back, you know. And she's already talked to me about things that she think would be really awesome for the program. And I hope that we never do lose her because she's inspiring to me. I learned a lot from her this season. And I think, too, we offered her a safe space, you know, that we were all there with baggage, you know. And that she would make comments all the time that maybe in other settings would be like, oh, like, I'm surprised she was brave enough to, you know, share that. And we all cried in class many times, you know, but it was the perfect setting for her to open up to people and start to heal, I think, from that.
Well, and that was one of the things that really touched me about what she shared was she said something like, this is my story and it's not changing.
Yeah.
Like, so I'm going to stop running from that.
And own
I'm
it.
Gonna own.
Yep.
This is my stuff. Yeah, I love that. Thanks for sharing that
with you. I mean, I love that story. I love that goal, get out and live, because I think many people, when they set goals for themselves, you know, it's not really living. And I think in an age of social media where we can portray that all of our life is positive, and everything I want, I'm getting, and I just do it, right? It's math. Yeah. I want it.
There you go. Right. You can't escape it.
Right? Instead of this recognition that life is a lot of ups and it's a lot of downs, and there's a lot of struggles, and there's a lot of letting go and saying, that's not going to happen for me. You know, like I've talked before on this podcast, I'm not a tall person. I wish that I was. My girls, I have four girls, they're not tall, right? And they'll say to me sometimes, like, how do I get taller? And I'm like,
oh no.
Have you looked at me? Have you looked at my sisters? Have you looked at my aunts? Like, we aren't tall people. And one of my kids came to me once, and I've talked about her before, it's daughter number three, and she was like, can you get, like, leg implants?
Oh no.
And I was like,
you probably can, right. though. That's scary.
I said, like, what do you mean? And she said, like, could I get, like, they cut my bones and they add in extra bones and then I have longer legs and I would be taller. And I was just like, wow. I hope not. I hope you can't do that. Right. But we talked about, like, well, what would your skin do? Like, Right? Because if all of a sudden your leg got longer, like, where's this extra skin coming from? Yeah. Right? And she was like, well, I've heard of stretch marks. So apparently it stretches.
You can stretch.
No, but we really talked about, like, just this is your body and nothing's wrong with your body. Like, you're like, I think she's like 5'3", maybe 5'4". And if this is all the height you get, like, what can't you do? You know, and I said to her, I'm like, look, you've been one of these kids. This doesn't come as a surprise to her. Like, you were not an easy kid from the time, really, you were conceived. and you're 17 now, and nothing has changed about that. You know, but I've said this about you and even to you for a long time. Like, from the time you were born, you had this, like, my body is a science experience. And I want to see what it can do, right? Like, I have these lungs. I want to see what I can do with that. I have these legs. Let me see how much I can push them. Like, I'm like, every part of your body has been this experiment for you. Why would you, like, and so far, so good. I mean, several broken bones and different stuff like that, right? But so far, so good. Like, what is your body not doing besides growing to the height you think it should be? Like, what's defective about your body? What isn't good with your body? You know, and I think I haven't heard her talk so much about how do I grow? What do I need to do to be taller?
Mm-hmm.
And she's more just focusing on this is my body and can I accept it and think it's pretty amazing.
Yeah. I think that's one of the really cool things, too, about being at the starting line of the half marathon, especially for the people who have never done it before. It's like you always have in your mind that runners are these really skinny, athletic-looking people, you know, but you go to the starting line of a half marathon or a 5K or any race, and you see every shape there, you know? And some of them are running, some of them are walking, and it's really inspiring. There's a chapter in the book, An Intuitive Eating, that reminded me of what you were just saying, how it talks about willpower, you know, and that is really not something that we need to be so caught up on. You're not defective in the willpower department just because you can't lose this weight. That doesn't make sense. Like, if you're a size 9 shoe, you can't will your foot to fit into a size 6, you know? It's just not going to happen.
Well, the Asians tried.
Yeah, they did.
Asian women, not men, but women.
So, I think the men were forcing them to do that, weren't they?
Yes.
Anyway.
Somehow sexually attractive. Yeah.
So, it's just really, I love kind of helping them discover that the bodies that they feel so unhappy with can do amazing things. And that settling is not always, like, a negative thing, you know? It's almost a relief sometimes that you don't have to continue beating yourself up
to
have this perfect 10, you know.
Because that chase can be so exhausting.
Exhausting. And think of all the other things that you're missing out on by focusing all of your energy that way. Think of all of the races that you don't sign up for because you don't run a certain pace or because you can't keep up with somebody, you know? And I just love when they realize that this body I have is amazing and it might not look the way that I have always thought it should, but it can do all these great things. There are a handful of women in the group who, without any pressure from myself, have started doing triathlons. And, you know, they were all first timers in the program and they really connected with each other and started like hiking afterwards and they wanted to start biking and then they started swimming and they signed up for this big triathlon. It's called the Spudman in Idaho. And this is their second year that they're going to do it and they do all these sprint triathlons. And so it's really cool that, you know, we didn't pressure anybody into doing that. They just discovered that like moving and feeling those endorphins is something that they love and that they're going to invest the money in the bikes and in the swimming coaches and they're going to go teach themselves how to do it.
And going along with that, you know, get out and live. We work with a lot of clients who will come to this realization like that the story they were given, the life they were given, they didn't choose it. And they've been struggling to live it, you know, and maybe not making all the best choices because of the story that they were born into and had very little choice about. And similar to our bodies sometimes, like we don't have a choice about whether we're curvy or straight or, you know, tall or short or all these different things. We don't have a choice about that, but we can live, mm-hmm. right? Like, we can get stuck in that this isn't what I wanted and I can't change it. And so we stop living and we don't have a choice about the life sometimes that we were given, mm-hmm. but we can still live and find a lot of joy in life.
And that makes me think of, as you were talking about willpower, Rachel, I think that is a concept that is so misunderstood when we're working on improving ourselves. Mm-hmm. And I think people understand that as, if my willpower is strong enough, I can focus it on anything and make anything change.
Yeah.
And one of the things that I love about Brené Brown's work is she's very upfront about, like, what doesn't change,
yeah.
and what you what you can't do, and that's fine.
Right.
And I listen to these women who are, or I listen to you talk about these women who are doing triathlons now, mm-hmm. and you said that was no prompting on your part. Like, I think willpower is much more effective when we see where life calls us and takes us.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. we are willing to answer that call.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Rather than to hide, oh, I could never do that, or I'm not, mm-hmm. like, we can try it out.
Or I have to control every aspect mm-hmm. instead of kind of letting myself be moved in a direction and then having mm-hmm. some willpower in that.
Yeah.
And even being okay if it's, like, some ladies will sign up for the program and be like, I never want to do a half marathon again. Right. You know? I'm going to stick with the 5K or the 10K. Yeah.
Or just walk.
Yeah, find that they don't even like walking. Like, walking 13 miles is not mm-hmm. something I enjoy, you know? They just want to go ride a bike.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I think it's part of this discovery process that's like, you know, it's okay if you don't like running. It's okay if mm-hmm. you don't like swimming. But find what you do like mm-hmm. and continue doing that so that you can feel good and feel accomplished and... not feel bad for it. Don't feel like you have to apologize for not liking certain kinds of exercise or healthy food. You know, there's this one lady that's like, don't put kale in anything you bring to this class.
So. Have you seen that meme? I've seen it going around Facebook and I love it. It says, if you add coconut oil to your kale, it makes it easier to scrape into the trash.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. And, you know, I think sometimes too, they come to class and they'll expect me to say, like, you know, they'll say, like, I had brownies, or I, you know, they bring a soda and they're like to drink with their dinner that they're eating in class, you know, and expect me to like
to gasp.
Make, yeah, or like right. wag my finger at them, like, you tisk, shouldn't tisk. Be doing that, yeah. you know, and it's like, we're all about like moderation here, you
yeah.
know,
yeah.
and eating intuitively means that you eat brownies and you drink a soda when you want it, but yeah. you don't eat it because it's part of your nightly ritual uh-huh. or because, you know, you're punishing yourself or mindlessly eating. You do everything with a purpose. You yeah. move with a purpose, you eat with a purpose, and it is definitely a learning process yeah. to get there. And I don't think that there's a finish line you cross and say, oh, I've arrived.
Right.
I'm an intuitive eater. I am a healthy person at my ideal body weight, because there's going to be law school, or there's going to mm-hmm. be
yeah.
grandkids living with you, or
a child lost.
Yeah. Whatever it is
yeah.
that you're going to experience that, and things are going to change. And then you have to evaluate where you are, if you're happy and comfortable, and then move forward mm-hmm. in the direction that that takes you.
Mm-hmm. I was one of the moms on one of my kids' soccer teams that I usually would sit by. She wasn't like, she was pretty like move, like to exercise, do all that kind of stuff. And one day she brought to the soccer game, she had like a 32-ounce Coke or something like that. I don't remember what the drink was. And I mean, I didn't say anything to her. Like,
yeah.
I don't care what she drinks. But anyway, she sat down and she was like, you know, I don't generally drink soda. And I was like,
Okay.
Like, yeah, I don't really generally see you with soda. And she said, but when I do, it is the right time to drink it.
Yeah.
And she's like, and I enjoy the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and I just thought, how great is that? Like, that attitude. Like, I don't generally drink soda, but when I decide to,
yeah.
it is the right time and I enjoy it.
Mm-hmm. I think you have to give yourself permission, and in those times that you want it, you do it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Just like, okay, maybe I exercise like 4 or 5 times a week, but there's going to be a day where I don't want to move.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And so I'm not going to do it. And
right.
I'm not going to feel guilty about it.
Right.
So I don't think we need to. And I I'm the kind of person that I don't, and I think I found a lot of comfort in intuitive eating in the book and some of the tools that it offered, because it says, you know, don't focus on the numbers. Mm. And I found that that was something that was stressing me out, and I was either beating myself up for it or rewarding myself mm-hmm. for it. Mm-hmm. You know, I'd weigh myself before my gym class on Saturday mornings, and I would be really upset the rest of the weekend if it wasn't the number that I wanted to see. Mm-hmm. And if it was, I would be like, all right, like I extra dessert, yeah. you know, exactly. which doesn't make sense. So I've encouraged a lot of ladies to stop weighing themselves and uh-huh. start, you know, looking at their progress in other ways, like how their clothes feel. Mm-hmm. Right. Look at the numbers when they go to their doctor. Like, is your blood pressure uh-huh. down? Mm-hmm. You know, different yeah. ways to kind of gauge that success. And not a lot of them want to throw their scale away, but mm-hmm. I think it's just whatever works for you and right. giving yourself that permission to.
Yeah. At least giving the scale less power.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's mm-hmm. other things that have some power, and it's not all the scale.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's probably a good place to pause for this episode. We'd really like to thank Rachel for coming and what she shared. I've really enjoyed this, and maybe we get to talk again sometime. I think it'd be great to have you back on.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah.
Especially, you'd mentioned me before we started recording, you guys are going to start a fall thing. We'd love to hear about that.
Thank you. That would be great.
Yeah.
So at the end of this episode, remember that your story matters. Remember there is something meaningful in every chapter. Don't wait to share your story until it's finished.
You can share your story with us on our Facebook page, Healing Paths, Inc., or on our website, www.thanksforsharingpodcast.com. This podcast is solely for the purpose of information and entertainment and does not constitute therapy, nor should it replace competent professional help.
At the end of another episode, we want to remind you that nobody has time for perfection. We are pursuing progress.
Remember the prayer of the perfectionist. Help me remember I can't do it all. Help me to take things one step at a time, and that the only step I need to focus on is the next right step for me.
Help me to remember that life is a journey. Help me to be able to separate all that I'm learning from all that I have to do. Help me to remember that I am not alone, that I can ask for help. Help me to strive for frequent awakenings, not mastery. I am enough. Amen.